Hello, I'm Steve Faggy. This is number 0264, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0264. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet musician Paul Cardle, who is also a heart transplant survivor. He talks about his new album, Saving Tiny Hearts.
Saving Tiny Hearts is also an organization, a charity, congenital heart disease, which is something I was born with. And for whatever reason, this number one birth defect is the least funded of all major defects. So Saving Tiny Hearts is an organization that is seeding research dollars so that more and more children, there's over a million, with some form of heart defect, so that they can survive and grow up and live their dream like me.
Professor Bill Bogart talks about his Huffington Post column and the nudge method that can lead to better health.
The nudge concept is the idea of government trying to promote good decisions in terms of health and general well-being, and doing it in a much less intrusive way by still preserving people's choices, but nudging them towards the healthier, better option.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He talks about ravens showing up in New York City.
Well, it's not just one raven, it's a few ravens, and the reason everybody got all excited about it is that anytime we get a whale off the coast or a shark in one of the rivers or something like ravens who haven't been here for about 100 years, everybody gets excited. So I guess, you know, you have war, pestilence, and all these other things going on all over the world. But if you really want to get a New Yorker excited, start talking about the flora and the fauna and the animals, et cetera, that seem to arrive in the city.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0264, was Steve Faggy, who is a Montreal Gazette copy editor and a blogger who is well known as Fagstein. You can check out his blog at blog.fagstein.com, and you'll find the link by going to this week's What's On page at thestufffile.com. And thank you very much, Steve, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A man in South Florida stopped in the middle of being chased by police to ask for water and to pet some cats. I could not make this stuff up if I tried. Authorities said 21-year-old Daniel Pinedo Valapatino had stolen thousands of dollars in cash from a friend's wallet after a night of drug use. He then crashed a Lexus into multiple vehicles, including a police cruiser and a fire hydrant, before ditching the car. Officers from Boca Raton and Delray Beach were pursuing Daniel on foot when he showed up at Candace Noonan's back sliding door. Noonan said, "Excuse me, can I help you?" And Daniel said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Next door, I'm mowing the lawn. Do you mind if I have a glass of water?" When Noonan returned with a bottle of water, she found the supposed landscaper inside her house, lying on the floor, petting her cats, which she described as very odd. It almost looked like he was either on drugs or was mentally handicapped, she said. Noonan's husband began questioning Daniel, who fled the premises. Noonan said they realized what happened when they noticed police vehicles passing outside. The suspect attempted to escape by swimming across the nearby intracoastal waterway, but was apprehended by a police boat. Police said that Daniel stole the money to pay back $2,000 to his mother. It always comes back to the mother, doesn't it? Well, I think there's more than meets the eye in this story. If you listen to this show on a regular basis, you already know how I feel about cats. They're evil. Little pieces of evil plotting against mankind. I've written several blog pieces about the topic. Well, I believe what's really happening here is that Daniel is involved in the criminal element at the behest of those cats, at Candace Noonan's house. He wasn't there to pet them. He was getting further instructions. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. Moving right along, if you've ever heard the term pull up their butt, you know that usually describes someone who is uptight, stuck up, or snobbish. But believe me, this is not the case. A Colorado woman says she was texting and driving when she hit a pole that went through her car, pierced her thigh and buttocks. Christina Jans says she was in the parking lot of Elizabeth Middle School to deliver her daughter's saxophone, which had been left at home. She said she was driving away from the school, and then Jans started texting her friend. I was running late for a business meeting, so I did a voice text. I looked down to make sure it was all right. The next thing I knew, I was looking up, and there was white powder from the airbags deployed, Jans said. Then Jans realized that the guardrail pole went through the front of her truck, through her buttocks, and into the back of her seat. Firefighters rushed to the scene where she says they used a saw to cut the front and back end of the pole before rushing her to the hospital. I went into surgery and I lost count of the stitches after 40. They stitched me up inside, too. I'm truly a miracle. They said if it had gone just a little bit the other way, I would have bled out, Jans said. Jans was released after a 4-day stay in the hospital. She will be able to get around with the help of a walker and is expected to make a full recovery. Jans says even though she was going 20 miles an hour and looking down for only a split second, she has learned a lesson she will never forget. Yeah, plus the fact that she is literally the butt of all jokes. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, speaking of the butt of all jokes, here's a quote. I was called to speak because I am an expert. Those are the words of Francesco Schettino about his invitation to lecture for 2 hours at the Sapienza University of Rome about emergency practices. I had to talk about panic management. After working 6 years as a ship's captain, I know what to do in these sorts of situations. If Francesco's name sounds familiar, that's because in 2012, he was the captain of the Italian cruise ship Costa Concordia, which hit a rock when he commanded it too close to an island off the coast of Italy, and it capsized, killing 32 passengers. But Francesco didn't help with the ship's emergency practices after that disaster struck. He abandoned ship, going to shore rather than helping evacuate his passengers. He was dubbed Captain Coward by the Italian press and faces 20 years in prison in his ongoing criminal trial. What exactly are the students learning in this 2-hour lecture? And whose brainiac idea was this to have him lecturing in the first place? Gee, I hope they can use some of his lecture against him in his own trial. That would be fitting. Anyway, it's time for our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program. It's musician Paul Cardle. But before we get to talking to Paul, here's just about 30 seconds of something from his new album. Artist Paul Cardle has a new album coming out. It's called Saving Tiny Hearts. You just heard a few seconds of a tune called Time. The album is the follow-up to his number one Billboard New Age album, New Life, that came out in 2011. And this album is one that's near and dear to his heart for reasons we'll get into in a moment. Paul joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you for the invitation, and hello to the audience.
Now, coming out with this album, first of all, let's go right to the title of the album, Saving Tiny Hearts.
Right. Well, Saving Tiny Hearts is also an organization, a charity. Congenital heart disease, which is something I was born with long before I was making records and selling out shows, I was born with a defective heart. And for whatever reason, this number one birth defect is the least funded of all major defects. So Saving Tiny Hearts is an organization that is seeding research dollars so that more and more children, there's over 1 million with some form of heart defect, so that they can survive and grow up and live their dream like me. And so this particular album is in their honor, and we're going to, I'm going to give away $1 to the foundation for every album that we sell.
Now, for those who don't know, you had a heart defect from birth and had a heart transplant 5 years ago this month, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, and most of my fans are blown away by that. They didn't realize I had been through some of those things. But yeah, it was exactly 5 years ago this year, this September, that I received a second chance at life. I got a new heart. Beating in my chest is a donor heart. It's an unreal experience, but like I've said to my friends, imagine you could take this old truck to a dump and you pick up a Porsche. Well, that's how I feel.
How has what you've been through changed or affected your music in any way, shape, or form?
It's profoundly affected it because I think most artists, particularly like me, our best material comes from the pain and the experiences we go through, because I was told early on I was not going to make it. There was no chance I would survive a heart transplant because I only lived on half a heart, and they thought, gosh, how do we even take this thing out? And so I was living like that, not knowing if I would survive. And then to come through and see that miracle take place, it just consumed me with ideas and emotion and inspiration, which the result was the number one record, New Life.
Well, you're healthy now, but were the odds against you? And by that I mean, what you were born with, is that something that someone gets to be as old as you were and have that, or?
No, it's congenital. So you're born with some form of deformed heart. There are, it's probably about every 15 minutes, one out of 125 babies throughout the world are born with some deformed heart. And really, we were surviving until the 70s when the medical research really took hold and people started to do more surgeries. Today, one in three children will die from a birth defect with related to the heart. And so there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. But I am a survivor because the necessary research was there and obviously inspired hands working on me.
Okay, so let's talk about your music. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, your last album came flying out of the gate and was number one, was on the top five for what, I think it was 30 weeks. Does that spur you on for this album or add pressure for this album?
There's always pressure. You've always got to make something better than before. But really, this album is a labor of love because I came out swinging, surviving, and did this, you know, amazing album. But this album is to give back. This is to celebrate life and everybody who was so good to me. And when you're sick, it's like opening Pandora's box. You meet so many families that have a child or they're in their adulthood and they're living with a deformed heart and they're in need of surgery. So when you meet these people, you fall in love with them. And so this is a labor of love to give back and try to give what we can to make sure that these kids do grow up and they do have all the opportunities that I've had.
Now, in addition to your unique story, there is something else that's unique about you, and that is you're part of the Steinway & Sons family.
That's right. It's one of the things that happened recently. Steinway, obviously, they have the premier piano. It's like the Bentley of all pianos. That organization has listed 1,600 of the finest pianists of all time, people from Irving Berlin to Rachmaninoff to today we have Billy Joel, and then they just invited me to join the family. So I'm thrilled.
It's an amazing honor. Were you surprised?
I've worked hard and done all I can to be the best pianist I can be, but I never thought that I would be considered, given that I am such an independent artist and I've never had much major support from record labels. I've always been able to just kind of maneuver on my own. And yet here comes this big sponsorship from a major company that is very well respected. So it's an honor.
Well, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are indeed an indie artist. Is that kind of a trailblazing situation for you? There's not really a blueprint to follow when you start as an indie artist, is there?
No, because there's no college to go to that teaches you how to have a career in the music business. But as an artist, I found myself early on, I was with a major label, and I ended that contract, and I found that it was much more enjoyable to have the control over my music. And because it's relaxing, soothing piano music, it's a smaller market, and yet there's millions of people that you can get to online where you don't need a lot of major investments.
Well, what did
from
you
a record label.
What did you find confining about being with a record label?
You know, I loved my experience with the record label. It just ran its course because the distribution opportunities opened up for me, and I saw that there were avenues that I could go in and manage myself with my team. So it wasn't necessarily needed that I needed a particular record label. I was comfortable doing and having control over my music, and I didn't want to... They wanted me to do a certain style that... It was not inspiring. I like to write music that really reaches the heart and touches the human spirit, and I didn't want to do the route that they encouraged me to go.
Now, how did
I actually ended up doing a lot better than most of the guys that gave in and did what they were asked to do.
How did your style, and obviously an independent style, how did your style develop over the years? Were you very sure of what you wanted to do, or was it something that developed gradually?
It developed gradually. I've always loved classical music, but I've also liked rock and roll. So if you can take a classical style piano piece and then mold it and create it so it's like a pop song, and then it's just soothing as can be with lots of melody, that's kind of where my forte is. That's the style that I've created. In a way, it's kind of like a soundtrack to life. There's no film that it supports. It's just there to give us inspiration.
The new album, as I said, it's entitled Saving Tiny Hearts, and part of the proceeds, as you mentioned earlier, is going to the Heart Society.
Saving Tiny Heart Society.
Right.
Yeah.
And people can find out more information by going to your website.
Yes.
And they could also...
PaulCardall.com.
PaulCardall.com. And they can find it there and other places as well. I mentioned the Steinway situation, and you've obviously come a long way from someone who at one point, if I'm not mistaken, early in life, walked away from the piano.
Well, I took lessons when I was 8 years old, but I come from a big family, and I'd rather go out and play at the time. I should have stuck with it, but I returned to playing the piano 10 years later, and 3 hours a day. And over time, it just developed into a career. So it's been interesting, but yeah, I quit early on. It just wasn't for me when I was a kid.
Well, congratulations on the new album, Saving Tiny Hearts. Congratulations on 5 years with the new heart, and continued success with all that you do, Paul.
Thank you, Peter. I appreciate it.
Indie artist Paul Cardle. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0264, and you'll find links to Paul's site where you can also find his album, Saving Tiny Hearts. And to play us out is just a little bit of a track on the album entitled Life and Death.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about something called the nudge method. No, it has nothing to do with sex. Get your mind out of the gutter. Also, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, will share a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. Here in a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But we still have a lot more Stuff File news to get through before we get to the other finer points of the program. Ashley Habat was frustrated at the preschool her son attended in Callahan, Florida. Why is it that every single day there is something new I dislike about Will's school? She vented on her Facebook page in a post restricted to friends only. You see where this is going, don't you? Yeah. Are my standards really too high, or are the people working in the education field really just that ignorant? But one of her friends printed out the private post and sent it to the taxpayer-supported Sunshine Christian Academy. The next day, her four-year-old son was expelled. You utilize social media to call into question not only the integrity, but the intelligence of our staff, the school wrote Habat in a dismissal letter they handed her the next day. These actions are also consistent with sowing discord, which is spoken of in the handbook that you signed. Habat says she wishes they had talked to her before taking things out on her son. He had done nothing wrong, she said. She didn't mean to sow discord, but now that they took things out on her four-year-old, the gloves are off. My mom cried, the boy said, and I cried too. As for his mom, I'm not playing, she said. They treated my son wrong, and they need to apologize for it. The boy's been accepted at another preschool. And I'm sure every single day she finds something new she likes about Will's new school because, let's face it, the other school was filled with thin-skinned pinheads. And maybe what she had to say about them being just ignorant, is actually correct. In any case, I'm going out on a limb to say that I'm guessing lawyers are now involved. Okay, we have a couple of international stories that are sexual in nature and are just too strange for words. Story number one, after police issued a plea to help in July to identify the perpetrators of a porn movie filmed inside an Austrian church and in which the actors' faces were obscured, a serious fan of Austrian porn spoke up, naming the 24-year-old female lead. The nude breasts of the star, he said, were unmistakably those of Babsy, a popular actress, and she was subsequently charged with trespassing in the church. Now, just how much porn do you have to watch to know actors' body parts? And shouldn't that be a concern to somebody? And story number two, Wilfred Mashaya told a magistrate in Harare, Zimbabwe in June that he wanted to divorce his wife because when they slept together, she would not even make any sexual sound, which to him was unbearable. The magistrate took the case under advisement. Under advisement? Seriously? What does he want his wife to do? Belt out the tune, Oh Sweet Mysteries of Life, At Last I've Found You, like Madeleine Kahn in Young Frankenstein? Wow. Like I said, too strange for words. And we have another grouping of stories here. These are two stories now that deal with some body modifications. Story number one, German Rolf Buchholz, who owns the Guinness Book of World Record for the most body piercings at 453, ouch, said he was upset to be denied entrance to United Arab Emirates in August to fulfill a performance of sorts at Dubai's Fairmont Hotel. Buchholz said officials gave no explanation, although in addition to the piercings, for example, at least 50 beads stuck to his lips, he also has implanted horns in his forehead. Seriously, do they really need to give an explanation? I'm surprised he got on the plane in the first place to get into the United Arab Emirates. Anyway, and story number two in this similar vein, Caius Viovis, age 33, is similarly concerned about his forehead horns. How many people have these things, by the way? While preparing for a trial in Hamden, Massachusetts, in a gruesome 2011 triple murder, he has decided to freshen up somewhat by removing the spikes from his nostrils, but still needs the judge's help to warn prospective jurors not to presume guilt from his six, count them, six horns. He has six horns. Now, I don't know how the jury would be able to pay attention to the testimony anyway. I'm sure many of them would simply be staring at the defendant, probably not even blinking. The man has six horns. Yeah. Guilty. Moving right along, we have time for one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. 12-year-old TJ Guerrero set up a time-honored tradition, a lemonade stand in front of his home in Dunedin, Florida. Then a neighbor replied with a newer tradition regarding innocent youthful pastimes. He reported the stand to authorities. Please help me regain my quiet home and neighborhood, complained 61-year-old Doug Wilkie in a letter to City Hall. The stand is an illegal business that increases traffic and parking problems in the neighborhood, and I'm very worried about the value of my home, which is why I built in a residential area, not a business area. The city wasn't concerned, especially after finding all of the other neighbors supported TJ. We're not in the business of trying to regulate kids like that, said City Planning and Development Director Greg Rice. We are not out there trying to put lemonade stands out of business. Oh, but here's the best part of the story, boys and girls. Publicity over the fight has business booming for TJ, which is just great. But the city is now investigating Wilkie because of a tip that he allegedly runs a financial services company out of his home and doesn't have a license required to do so, which means he faces a $250 fine per day. $250 per day. That would buy a lot of lemonade, wouldn't it? Yeah. Oh, you know what they always say about karma, don't ya? Case closed. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Can we nudge our way to better health? And what is the nudge concept anyway? To talk about that, we have on the line with us Bill Bogart. He's a law professor from the University of Windsor in Ontario and an international expert on reducing the harm of risky behavior. He joins us on the line right now. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So what exactly is the nudge concept? I know you've written about it recently in the Huffington Post.
Yeah. The nudge concept is the idea of government trying to promote good decisions in terms of health and general well-being, and doing it in a much less intrusive way by still preserving people's choices, but nudging them towards the healthier, better options. So it's been born, I think, of a sense that people across the political spectrum have found government to be kind of heavy-handed on occasion, and spent a lot of resources, time, money elsewhere, and not got a lot of bang for the proverbial buck. So it's really born of those kinds of reactions.
Now, I understand that this was a brainchild of two American academics.
It was called Thaler, an economist, and Sunstein, a law professor. But you know, they deserve full credit for labeling the concept as nudge. But the concept's actually been around for a while. I mean, I would say for at least two decades, various sectors in governments and in various countries have tried to regulate, try to achieve policy goals, and with at the same time being less heavy-handed. But you know, Thaler and Sunstein really deserve credit for focusing our attention on the concept.
Can you give us an example of how the concept would be applied? In what forms would it work?
Yeah, I can give you a couple of examples. I mean, there's one helping people to quit smoking. So people voluntarily, so that's the choice thing, sign up to put a certain amount of money into a bank account every month and agree to quit smoking. And if after 6 months they're still not smoking, they get the money back. If they return to smoking, they have to forfeit it to some charitable cause. Another example would be in the gambling area. We know that most people who gamble are recreational gamblers. They're fine. It's a pastime for them. It's a recreation. But there's a kind of hardcore that develop really serious problems around gambling. And there's something that casinos offer pretty well every jurisdiction, and that's something called self-exclusion agreements, where people who believe they are experiencing gambling impairment can sign an agreement with the casino that they are going to exclude themselves from the casino, and they consent to the casino actually ejecting them from the premises if they try to re-enter. So you see the concept, it's the person's choice, but the good decision here is the recognition of, look, I've got problems with gambling, I can't really handle this, so I shouldn't go near a casino, and if I do, I should agree that the casino can eject me.
Now, the two examples you just gave, to me there seems to be a bit of a difference in each one. In the first one you described, there was almost sort of like a reward for not smoking, and that is the money you put in, you eventually got to keep as opposed to losing it. There was that incentive. But in the gambling example you gave, what is the incentive to the person who just simply voluntarily says, put me on this list?
Well, I guess the incentive is to not go further, get into even larger problems in terms of gambling impairment. Do you know what I mean? And so, but I think you're also focusing on an important point. I mean, it doesn't always necessarily operate through incentives. There may be some stick. You know, it isn't always a carrot. Sometimes it's a stick. But the person themselves agrees to the stick. And I guess the stick with the self-exclusion is that I agree that the casino can forcibly remove me. But at the same time, the incentive reward is, look, I'm recognizing I've got a problem, and I don't want this problem to become even worse, so I'm prepared to enter into this agreement.
But in the two items we're also talking about, there's a certain amount of addiction involved. And just the concept of using the term nudge means, to me, it sounds like there's somebody who is just on the edge and needs a little help for the push. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. I have a brother-in-law who, when I was a little kid, he just smoked like a chimney. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could pick him out of a lineup because he was always behind a cloud. Constant smoking. Well, his daughter was born, and we're going way back now, when his daughter was born, my niece, back in 1966, he quit cold turkey. He hasn't smoked a mm-hmm. cigarette since then. So, you know, was he really addicted? Did he just need the nudge of fatherhood in this case to say, I'm not going to smoke anymore, as opposed to people who just can't stop smoking or just can't stop gambling?
Yeah, Peter, I think we're moving into something that I also talk about at the HuffPost. I don't regard these nudges as a panacea. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That, and in fact, I would say one of the criticisms of Thaler and Sunstein is that they're rather over-enthusiastic about where these nudges can take us in terms of good policy making. I think the nudge is useful. It can work in certain circumstances. But I know in most instances, it's also going to have to work hand-in-hand with other regulatory interventions, some of which may be more intrusive. But if the benefits outweigh the costs, then I think policymakers, including myself, would say the intrusion is worth it. And let's go back to the smoking example. I mean, we've now taxed cigarettes very highly for a couple of decades. That's more than the nudge, because people are going to feel that in their pocketbooks. But we've known for some time that cigarettes are what's called price elastic. They are consumption is very influenced by the price of the goods, particularly amongst youth. And of course, it's youth that we really want to get to say, don't start this highly addictive, highly toxic habit. So, you know, the bank account example that I used before, it's fine. I think it has helped some people to stop. But in other instances, there's going to be other kinds of things that will help people to stop or even not start in the first place. And with your brother-in-law, it seems that he didn't want to be a bad role model for his child, and so that was incentive enough for him to give up the habit.
Would you consider the warning labels, especially here in Canada, the warning labels on cigarette packages, the graphic ones, to be a bit of a nudge?
Yeah, that's more of a nudge. That is more of a nudge, right? Because you're saying to people, look, we're not saying you can't smoke. We're trying to bring home to you in a very clear, as you say, very graphic way, what the consequences of this are going to be. Now, it is very interesting. That's an interesting example, though, Peter, because for consumers, it's a nudge, because we're not really changing the economic incentives. We're not foreclosing choice. It's more than a nudge for the cigarette companies. Right. I mean, they wouldn't have done this voluntarily. And so there's laws that require this. Some may say it's heavy handed. I would say that given what the risks and dangers of tobacco are, they're justified. And so I'm coming back to my point about the nudge is a useful concept. It's got even more potential than I think has been exploited so far. But in many, many instances, it's not the solution in and of itself. It's got to work hand-in-hand with other regulatory interventions.
And it's an interesting topic overall, indeed, and people can read up more about it by reading your column that's in the Huffington Post, huffingtonpost.ca. Bill, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Peter.
Professor Bill Bogart. Again, you can read his article in the Huffington Post entitled How the Nudge Method Could Help You Quit Smoking. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0264, and you'll find links to Bill's story and also links to his website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Picture this. Three golfers are standing on a green waiting to putt, while the fourth golfer in their group stands by his ball 50 yards away from the green. Rather than hit his ball, the golfer off the green tells the other three to putt so they won't have to wait. They finish putting, but the golfer off the green hits his ball while they're still standing by the hole, and he hits one of them in the eye. The golfer who is hit suffers a serious eye injury and sues the man who hit him. He probably has a very good case. But then he also sues the golf course. Why? He claims it's also responsible because it didn't post a warning about the dangers of golfing. Let's be fair, some things are so obvious they don't need a warning, and anyone who's ever even held a golf club knows that you don't hit a ball directly at someone else. Allowing a golf course to be sued when a golfer willingly does something reckless won't make golf safer, just more expensive for the rest of us. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And yes, indeed, Peter Franklin is with us once again from the city that never sleeps, NYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, live from the streets of New York, where it's so hot today.
I can imagine. Listen, let me ask you this. One of the things that's in the news this week that caught my eye, and I'm just wondering how you felt about it. After 12 years of running your fair city, Michael Bloomberg is back at the helm of his media empire. How does that sit with you?
It doesn't. I mean, I think most people don't care one way or another. I mean, when he ran Bloomberg Media, he was powerful and rich, and then he supposedly gave it up completely, which anybody believes in that believes in the tooth fairy. He didn't give up anything. And he was a good mayor, pretty good. I mean, not any worse or any better than anybody else. And I guess he's probably bored sitting around and doing nothing, so he's going to make believe he's going back to work. But, I mean, he was kind of like a neutral guy. I guess about half the people liked him and half the people hated him. It's like with Obama. Half the people like him, half the people hate him.
Fair enough. Meanwhile, in other news, I understand that there's a raven in your city, and it's not from Baltimore.
Well, it's not just one raven. It's a few ravens, and the reason everybody got all excited about it is that any time we get a whale off the coast or a shark in one of the rivers, which are actually estuaries, or something like ravens who haven't been here for about 100 years, everybody gets excited. So I guess, you know, you have war, pestilence, and all these other things going on all over the world. But if you really want to get a New Yorker excited, start talking about the flora and the fauna and the animals, et cetera, that seem to arrive in the city.
And speaking of animals, what's the situation about New York City just building a stable and headquarters for the NYPD's mounted unit apartment?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, how would you like to live in an apartment that's above a stable? But the point of the story is that you have this whole group of people in New York who are working so hard to get rid of the horses in Central Park. They think it's terrible, it's evil, they're mistreated, and all this other thing. It's nonsense. I can tell you that the guys who take care of those horses and use them, they use them for making a living by taking people around in the wagons, and I can assure you they take very good care. So there's no getting mistreated. I mean, they're horses. They're not people in a horse suit. Well, at the same time, you got these people in the authority that wanted to get rid of the horses, they built this big new stable, hired many, many more horses, because they found that a horse in New York City is a wonderful law enforcement tool. I mean, after all, if you're a group of people who've taught to move it along, and then all of a sudden a 2,000-pound horse is walking towards you, you're going to move it along. So, you know, make up your mind, fellas. Do we like the horses, or do we hate the horses?
But what about these people living below the stable, like you said?
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, the only apartments that are vacant in this city generally are apartments that are just above a cheese shop, or just above a butcher store, or just above a nightclub. So I don't know that I would move into an apartment just above a stable, but at least you'd have a lot of police around and maybe no one would break into your apartment.
Meanwhile, you have an opportunity to talk to a lot of people who travel, a lot of tourists, people who come into either JFK or LaGuardia. I'm just wondering, the story that was in the news about people fighting on planes about reclining seats, has that something that has worked its way into people talking about it in your taxi?
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, people have always talked about the fact that all of our airliners today, the planes are designed by dwarfs. I mean, did you know that?
Yes, it seems that way.
Yeah. Yeah, they have little people someplace in Kansas that design the planes, so we all sit there terribly squashed. Well, you know, now it's been escalated, and there was a New York connection where it's possible, it seems, that you can buy some kind of a little gadget, which the airlines, of course, don't want you to have, that you can attach to the seat in front of you surreptitiously, and it makes it impossible for that seat to come all the way back into your knees. Well, they had a situation the other day, and the two passengers, of course, got into a fight, and it got so bad that the pilot had to land the plane and throw them both off. It was a flight going, I think, from New York to California. Probably two New Yorkers would have such foolishness.
Now, which brings me to another topic, a similar vein. I understand in New York City you have basically two types of cars that you use for taxis, unlike, for instance, here in Montreal, where we don't have a regimented size of vehicles. Has anybody ever complained about room or lack thereof in the back of a cab?
Yeah, no. Years ago, used in the industry, an automobile that was called the Checker, which was a large, boxy kind of a thing, and they went out of business. Then we had the Chevrolet Caprice, and isn't around anymore, really. And then we had the Ford Crown Victoria, and that's also kind of disappeared as cabs. So we're constantly looking for new and different models. But it's not the best recommendation in the cab industry in New York to use a car, because usually they really get a lot of wear and tear. They don't last well. And the car manufacturers are afraid that people are going to associate the cars that we buy with the model that they might buy. So they're not too thrilled if we suddenly decide, okay, now we're going to try a new model. But basically speaking, all 13,000 cabs, which is the same number we had in 1938, has to be the same model car and the same color.
And that current model is now?
Well, we're finishing off the Crown Victorias, and we're starting to try a lot of different ones, a couple of different Japanese ones and little wagons and what have you. But it's take the subway. It's a lot easier.
Would you like to see, as a taxi driver, would you like to see it go back to the day, not necessarily the Checker Cab Company coming back, but a company dedicated to making a cab like the Checker Cab Company?
No. From my point of view, I have absolutely, positively, and this may shock you, no relationship with the vehicle at all. It's not my friend. It's not my home. And I have nothing to do with it. All that it does for me is make me money. So if you can come up with a cab that somehow would make me more money, then I'm interested in talking turkey.
Okay. Well, how do you feel about your smartphone? I understand in the Big Apple there's a new proposal to require a kill switch.
Yeah, I don't know what they're making such a... It's a good idea, because it's probably the number one item that's stolen, not only in New York, but every place in this country and probably every place in the world. Everybody's grabbing somebody else's cell phone. And this presumably is some kind of a cell phone that if it gets taken away from you, somehow through some kind of technology, the phone can get turned. Well, you know, that's an all very nice idea, but my suggestion is if you lose your phone or your phone is stolen, take 30 seconds to call the phone company, and they'll be happy to turn it off. So I don't know why you need a special gadget. See, that's it. Everybody has to have a gadget for everything. They've forgotten how to talk to another human being.
You may have a point there. And speaking of things being stolen, this is something you used to see in movies all the time. I'm surprised it's only starting to happen now, or maybe it's being reported now. Thieves dressed as car rental employees taking away cars?
Yeah, it's been happening an awful lot in New York City, mainly at Avis. I mean, I hope Avis isn't one of your sponsors, but that's the fact. People bring the car in. The guy comes over and says, did you have a nice day? Oh, yeah, the car was wonderful. Okay, I'll check you in, and you'll get a receipt emailed to you. And so you turn over the $25,000 car to this absolute perfect stranger, and what he does is he takes the car and drives away. So I'm going to try that sometime. I'm going to go up to people on the street and ask them if they could give me their car for a few minutes.
Well, you know what, Avis, they try harder.
That's right, and they lose harder.
And finally, one last thing I want to talk about, and that is a celebrity sighting. You actually saw a dame.
Yes, what a dame, too. And I was going to go up to her and say, and we're talking about Judi Dench, I was going to go up to her and say, I want to be a spy. I want to be a spy. Can you make me a spy? But I figured that would be as corny as me going up to Robert De Niro and saying, are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? Those people probably get sick and tired of those kind of remarks being made in their presence. So I kept my mouth shut, and I just looked at her adoringly.
Where did you see her?
She was out in the Hamptons.
Ah.
The Hamptons is a very ritzy area of Long Island where all the rich and beautiful people go. And you see, if you're not rich and beautiful, like I'm not, although I am beautiful, the next best thing to that is having a friend who's out there.
You know, she's one of the busiest actresses out there, and she's turning 80 in December. So it's pretty impressive that her career seems to escalate. That and also a good friend of hers who's also turning 80 in December, Dame Maggie Smith. Both of them are extremely busy these days, so kudos to both of them.
Yeah, well, one thing you can say for the Brits is they turn out some very good theater. They really do. And by the way, just speaking of theater, and since you happen to have a connection to Canada, I might mention to you that everybody here has suddenly discovered a Toronto detective called Murdoch.
Oh, yes, on the CBC, yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious. The number one comment I'm hearing is, who would have thought Canadians could be so creative?
We're usually very creative. It's just that we have to leave the country to do it most of the times.
Well, but anyway, the show's a hit. Tell Detective Murdoch when you see him.
I will do that. And people can always find out more information by going to your website at www.gabby.com. They can also send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much, sir, once again for being on the program with us.
Thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have one more Stuff File news story to get to, and, of course, an idiot of the day. Stay tuned for that. On a program which you may have heard me say once or twice in the past, is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. It really is the smarter way to listen to radio. Yes, indeedy, it is. Try it. It really is. Well, the tornado that ripped through Kingsport, Tennessee on July 27th damaged Jared Christian's house, leaving furniture and tools strewn all about his lawn. Unfortunately, according to police, who filed four charges against him the next day, some of the items, and they include an air compressor, a welder, a ratchet, an air hose, and a weed trimmer, belonged to his neighbors who had long suspected, without proof I may add, that Christian had burglarized their homes. Well, apparently, they've got the proof. So there you go. And also, apparently, Mother Nature is now a crime fighter. Anyway, as promised, here it is, boys and girls, your last story of the day. And that would indeed be the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Raymond Betson became the most recent perp in July in Swanley, England, to intend to break into a store, this time a money lending store, by ramming the wall with a digger. But Raymond broke through the wrong wall. And then another wrong wall after that. Police were summoned by the commotion and arrested him. Now, you know the question I'm going to ask. Why, oh why, would someone who is trying to break into a building with a digger not even figure out which wall was the right one? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0264. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0264. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.